Welcome to the Conversations Politics podcast from Canberra. I'm Michelle Grattan. The Abbott government's first budget is producing more than average public debate and angst, with Tony Abbott set to break his no higher taxes election promise. Coalition MPs are agitated and the opposition has plenty of ammunition already. The tax levy, however, will hit only a few people. But other changes, including assaults on middle-class welfare and higher petrol prices, will mean that there will be pain all round. The government says it's all in the cause of fiscal repair. Chris Richardson is an economist and a partner at Deloitte Access Economics, and he joins us today. Chris Richardson, how much repair is needed? How bad a shape is our budget in?
The budget is in bad shape and it does need a lot of repair. It doesn't necessarily need it fast, but the problem is bigger than people realise. And this reverberates all through Canberra and the nation. We have, Canberra loves its narrative, but that narrative is a messy one at the moment because essentially the economy is broadly okay and the budget is not. And that gap, Mr. and Mrs. Suburbs do not get it. And it comes down to the very simple point that we had a marvellous but temporary boom. And off the back of it, we made a whole bunch of permanent promises, family benefits, baby bonuses, pension increases, 8 tax cuts in a row, all those sorts of things. Yes, the budget is in considerable difficulty. I'm not sure I'd use the word emergency. But there is a big problem. It's much bigger than people realise. And sadly, I suspect this problem will continue to linger. The politicians just don't have the mandate to deal with what we currently have.
The government's already flagging long-term changes to the retirement age and to eligibility for the pension. How far do you think this should go? Would you, for example, favour putting the family home into the assets test for pensions?
Michelle, given that people hate economists already, there's probably no extra danger in me saying yes, that is something I would do. Let me step back, big picture. I made the point, temporary boom was spent on permanent promises. And that didn't stop in the run-up to the last election. In fact, just as Treasury was really revising down its estimates of how many dollars there were in the budget now and into the future, the temporary boom absolutely wound down. We were, as a nation, both sides of politics, we were signing on to a lot of extra spending. Now, a lot of it made sense. We're a rich nation. We should have a disability insurance scheme. And arguably we should spend more on schools, all those sorts of things. The problem is we were promising more, to do more, off the back of a budget that was already broken. So we do need a series of national conversations about how we do things. What are we doing in the budget that we could do better? Every nation, every community, every society has only two aims, prosperity and fairness, size of the pie and how it is sliced up. And that, our budget is our national social compact. We want, doing this well is really important for each and every Australian. And it's why I've always sweated over budgets. We waste so much money. We can have the wrong taxes at the wrong rates. We spend on the wrong stuff. If I focus on spending, simply because I think in the last decade, Canberra has made most of its mistakes on the spending side of the budget. I think there are two big categories. The Commission of Audit pointed to both of them. One, the one you're asking about, was middle-class welfare. The other one is corporate welfare, where there are also big dollars and many things that as a nation we do are more about, these workers happen to live in that marginal electorate rather than good economic policy. On middle-class welfare, we set the tests, if you like, the dividing lines in the wrong spot. When the budget was running strongly, when the China boom was throwing money at the budget, we had a dividing line of about $150,000 of family income. That was essentially not affordable, and the government is talking about winding that back. And there's a lot of pain involved in that. But more broadly, it's not just you know, income tests like that, you know, family incomes of $150,000. It is asset tests. And you know, yes, indeed, the Commission of Audit raised the sacred cow of the value of the family home. Worth noting what they did, though, because it's not what people thought. It's not the value of the family owned in the pension assets test. It's that it's the dollars above thresholds. If you're a single pensioner, it's the value of your home above $500,000. If you're a couple pensioner, it's above $750,000. And I think that's not unfair. Say you didn't want to save a single cent out of the pension system. You were just juggling money within it. We have this silly setup at the moment where the family home's not counted. We are giving money to not many people, but enough people who have a lot of wealth. It might be tied up in their home. But again, things like reverse mortgages and the like these days, if you want to stay living in that home, you can. You can get that money out, even if the government is asking for some of it, or more to the point, the government's not giving you a pension because of it.
More generally, the Audit Commission has received a bit of a pasting all round since its recommendations. Do you think that it did a good job, or do you think that with the appointment particularly of Tony Shepherd to head it, a former president of the Business Council, that it looked to have too much of a business flavour?
Look, I think it did a great job. Now, that's not a common opinion at the moment. It may become a rather more common opinion with the passing of time. I think a lot of the basic difficulty comes back to what we were talking about earlier, that the average Australian doesn't realise the economy's okay and yet the budget is busted. And that gap is essentially what the Commission of Audit was pointing to. If the budget is busted, they wanted to do something about it. Because people don't realise the size of the problem. They look at the sorts of solutions that the Commission of Audit pointed to, and they run screaming for the hills. But if we don't do things of that kind, then we have deficits essentially forever. And I suspect that, you know, there'll be some things in budget night around Commission of Audit. More broadly, though, it's not going to go away. Or the sorts of things it talked about, you know, where we start testing, you know, incomes for or taking family benefits and the like away, what we're doing around assets tests for pensions, co-payments for Medicare, all those sorts of things. None of those issues go away because deficits won't go away. Now, I don't agree with everything in the Commission of Audit. For example, it suggested that some benefits could be withdrawn at the rate of 75 cents in the dollar. I don't think that's just too much. But in the broad, there were a bunch of sensible decisions. Sensible recommendations in the Commission of Audit. Middle Australia doesn't think so. But in part, that's because it doesn't yet realise the need for the conversations around these things.
Now, the government has said that it'll return the budget to surplus in several years, and within a decade it will have a surplus of 1% of GDP. How quickly do you think it's necessary to return to surplus?
You certainly don't need to be there tomorrow. I'm not even that fussed if we're not there in 5 years. In 10 years, I'd like to see it. And it's worth stepping back. I see broadly two big reasons to improve the budget. One is, at some stage, Australia will have a recession. You know, we got lucky around a global financial crisis, but there are no miracle economies. China isn't, Australia isn't. And the next time things go wrong, and, you know, they are in other big and rich economies around the world, even in just the last handful of, you know, you see unemployment rates of 8-9% in some unfortunate countries, well above that. When things go wrong, I want the budget to be in Rolls-Royce condition, and I want both sides of politics to use it in defence of the economy. We had, you know, with the benefit of hindsight, we spent too much in a stimulus around the global financial crisis in Australia, but that was still the right thing to do. You know, other nations made the other mistake of spending too little, and the big tragedies of my professional career have been recessions. When unemployment goes up a lot, it stays high for a very long period of time. And when you look at the individuals, if they've been unemployed for about 2 years, then more or less they're unemployed forever. And avoiding that is extremely important. I want the budget to be healthy so it could fight the good fight next time there's a downturn. And I think there's a fight to be had too in terms of fairness around generations. I was born in the last gasp of the baby boom, and we've had it absolutely our way. You know, the budget has bent in our direction at every single point. We've as a nation, we gleefully signed on to things that I would see as just dumb. I mean, back in 2007, we stopped taxing the money when you take it out of superannuation, benefits, as it's called. That's not good superannuation tax policy. It's really quite bad personal tax policy, and it's a disaster around intergenerational fairness. We want to improve the health of the budget, I would also say, around a fairness point as well.
Now, on this point of fairness, the government is arguing that it will impose its deficit levy on higher income earners so they bear their fair share of the pain of the budget. Do you think this is a wise road for the government to be taking? It's run into a lot of opposition in its own ranks from business more generally.
Look, I do think that. And again, I recognise I'm in the minority. If you sit back and look at other periods of budget repair in Australia, done by Hawke and Keating, they did it about two-thirds on spending, one-third on taxes. Howard and Costello did it about three-quarters on spending, one-quarter on taxes. Taxes, I think, have to be in the mix. I would certainly agree that most budget repair should come from spending. But I would not ignore taxes. Now, if you're looking at taxes, no, and you had no political constraints, I wouldn't start with a deficit levy, no. You know, you'd be doing stuff around GST, you might be doing stuff around superannuation, FBT, up fuel taxes even, and you know, it looks as though they're back in the mix. But that sort of, you know, I am genuinely happy to see the government raising the possibility of the deficit levy, in part because it hates to do it, right? You know, this says to me it's a government which is trying to do something here. And yes, I do think tax needs to be part of the solution. And let's have a bit of perspective. If it ends up being 2 cents in the dollar on those people who earn over 180,000, 2%, 2% of taxpayers, a smaller proportion still of the population, raising a bit over $1 billion a year, it's a $400 billion a year budget, and it's a $1.6 trillion a year economy. It's not big.
And you don't think it'll knock confidence in the business community, as has been said?
So, you know, the business community's been worried about it. But if whether you take a dollar out of the economy from doing something on family benefits or a dollar in doing something around a deficit levy, you know, you can argue the impact on the economy is a bit different, but it's not enormously different. If you want budget repair, eggs will be broken on the way through.
And petrol excise is also a desirable way to go?
Yeah, look, you know, 13 years ago, 13 years and 2 months ago, we said it was a mistake to stop the clock ticking. You know, petrol excise has been 38.1 cents a litre since 2001, meaning that every day as a nation we choose to have fuel taxes smaller as a share of the economy than the day before. That's dumb. We said it at the time. We would say it now. At the very least, I would love on budget night to see that clock start ticking again.
I think you will.
there's nothing like walking along a Canberra corridor at this time of year. The rumour mills are running hot.
A lot of this budget, when you think about it, is about winding back Howard measures, isn't it, or Howard approaches?
Look, I would say that the mistakes, if you like, you know, sure, there were mistakes in the Howard Costello years, there were mistakes in the Rudd-Gillard Swan years. From my viewpoint, I have, you know, who's to blame? They all are. Again, temporary boom, permanent promises. To be fair to Howard and Costello, Treasury at the time did not say, you know, all booms eventually go bust. They did not whisper in the ear of the Prime Minister and the Treasurer, you are but dust and unto dust you shall return. Yeah, look, they all made mistakes, but we are where we are.
Now, the problem with some of these measures, of course, is that they break the Abbott promise not to put up taxes. How much political capital do you think Tony Abbott can afford to burn at this stage?
So, if I step back and think of last year's election, both sides of politics went to the election promising a lot of extra spending, you know, disability care and schools, and promising rapid budget repair. And it turns out that you can't do that, especially when your starting point was a big deficit. This was, you know, we said it at the time, we've said for some years now this moment was coming. We had both sides promising to do the impossible, and now we're surprised that they're breaking their promises. It did not matter who won the election. It was essentially the same policies from both sides going to the election. You add up the dollars of difference on promised budget balances from the Coalition versus Labor, you're talking 0.5% of flows into and out of the economy. You add every single dollar of difference across taxes and spending, you're talking 2% of the economy. There was 98% agreement on everything, you know, in the budget. We had, as an electorate, we signed on to that. We ignored the elephant in the room that both sides made promises that could not be kept. Now, Tony Abbott, to be fair, I don't think he realised that.
But we've got the Charter of Budget Honesty these days. Surely governments can no longer say things have changed dramatically.
Except we're talking about years. So ahead of the election, the usual 4 years that the government looks out, the big costs were pushed beyond that period. And then, well, some people jumped up and down and we were among them saying, well, you know, give us a 10-year look. And when the government of the day did give us a 10-year look, they said, no worries, we'll be back on surplus if we hold spending after inflation to no more than 2% extra a year. Now, to me, that was a bit of a pea and thimble trick. It's like me saying, I've got to lose 10 kilos. And when people say, well, how are you going to do it? I say, I'm going to lose a kilo a month. I'm sorry, to announce a rule of 2% a year after inflation, or as the Audit Commission would now have it, about 1.75% a year after inflation, that's not a solution. That tells you, you know, what you've got to do. But the solution means I'm going to cut that spending. I'm going to raise that tax. We are now in a phase where Australia needs its politicians to make some fundamental choices. They can keep their promises if we really want them to, but our budget will remain broken. Or they can do the right thing and they can repair the budget. And given that fundamental choice between keeping faith to the promises they made and doing the right thing, again, hate me, I'm an economist. I would prefer them to do the right thing.
You could argue, couldn't you, that this is a choice between either trashing the budget or trashing elections.
Yes.
Because if every time you have an election full of promises and it's followed by people saying, hey, that didn't mean anything, then you have a really debased political process, even though you might have a better budget.
Yeah, look, I couldn't agree more. And you know, given our respective backgrounds, Michelle, you're looking to the politics and I'm looking to the economics, but I could not agree more. We have a problem. At least now, you know, as you always get with change of government, there's a degree of glasnost around the numbers and so on. I do think that the budget numbers that came out in December tell the truth. They are essentially deficits as far as the eye can see until difficult decisions get taken. I would like it if the, you know, given that past elections have failed to have these conversations, I would love it if the next election did it. I would hope the next election is fought on rather more truthful figures, if you like, coming out of Treasury and the Parliamentary Budget Office. And again, no criticisms of those organisations, but you know, I don't think we had the right numbers. They weren't asked to put the right numbers before
but
the Australian
election. Figures truthful under the
They were charter? Truthful under the Charter of Budget Honesty, and it is completely true that if you hold you know, spending to no more than 2% a year after inflation, you solve a budget problem. That doesn't tell you enough, however. You need to take the next step and say, what does that mean? answer, that means horrendous political choices before Australia. They are around co-payments in Medicare. They are around some money out of family homes, not the first dollar, but at some point some dollars getting put into pension asset tests. They are around moving where we've done family benefits. They are around making taxes part of this solution too. You can't hide behind the numbers of 2%. What does it mean? Answer, it means ugly. And it was distressing that Australia didn't have that conversation ahead of the last election. We kept calling it the Seinfeld election about nothing. I would love, Commission of Audit has now pointed us to where those conversations have got to go. Our politicians and our electorate have to face up to it. Otherwise, those deficits do not go away.
Let me ask you for a bit of an early audit on the economic players. Firstly, Joe Hockey, how do you think he's going?
Look, I do think he's going well. It is, it's a bit like Kermit the Frog, being treasurer. It's not easy being green, it's not easy being treasurer. And especially at a time when the budget has to be cut, you are the hated person. He is, the impression I have, fighting a good fight. It is really difficult, though, at a time when the electorate doesn't understand, and Joe Hockey himself quite correctly has been drawing attention to the end of the era of entitlement. The specifics, though, and arguing for them in Cabinet and then outside with the Australian electorate, that's where the rubber will hit the road. But so far, so good.
It's very early, but how would you compare him to, say, Peter Costello, Wayne Swan?
Look, it is too early to tell.
And what about Matthias Cormann? He's taking a quite high profile. What's your impression there?
And I can't claim to know him, but again, the impression I have is, to be fair, is broadly true of all finance ministers over time, but he is fighting a good fight and trying very hard to hold a budget line and do the right sorts of things. I am happy with the Treasurer and the Finance Minister that Australia has. They are an unlucky pair. They have inherited those jobs at a time when ugly decisions need to get made.
And what about Tony Abbott? Of course, we always thought he was a bit of a case of rising damp. Are you pleased that he's a bit drier than many people expected?
I've mentioned things around industry welfare, and it takes a lot of courage to take that on. And he did display some courage, not on every decision, but on some decisions. So we have seen some of that so far, as is true of all of them. It's too early to tell. Budget night, in many ways, will be the first test. The willingness even to put a deficit levy on the table, the fuel taxes and the rest of it, does people feel free to hate it, all right? But it says to me a government that's, to deliberately do unpopular things is an unusual thing in a politician or set of politicians. I like to see that. Whether they'll do enough compared to what Australia needs remains to be seen, but there's certainly the element there of elements of a start.
Now, people always talk up a government's first budget. Is this really a make-or-break effort for the Abbott government? And do you think it will be more like the Dawkins 1993 disastrous budget, which really haunted that government till the end, the Keating government? Or do you think it will be in the mould of Peter Costello's success of 1996?
And you're talking about two budgets that attempted budget repair, and in one the politics failed, and in the other the politics succeeded. And we don't know. I do have to say that whether the politics succeed or fail is not just a function of the decisions they take and how well they sell them. It's the environment they're selling them in and the danger. And yes, this will be a really important budget, maybe the most important budget of this government. The first ones usually do end up that way. But what they're trying to sell, fixing a budget, is really tough when the average Joe does not understand the need. They saw for a while that not merely were there surpluses, but they seemed to be easy. You could have a surplus and you could have tax cuts and you could have pensions going up and you could have family benefits and baby bonuses and all sorts of things. For a while it looked easy, and then surpluses disappeared, but they were promised to return any moment, any tick of the clock. And then you had an election in 2013 where, you know, there was a sort of a discussion of the need for budget repair, but the actual, you know, hand on stack of Bibles promises were around lots of extra spending. No wonder Mr. and Mrs. Suburbs don't yet see or understand a need for change, and that makes it really tough for the government.
Chris Richardson, you'll have a busy few days ahead with a lot of commentating to do. Thank you very much, and that's all for today. Thanks to my producer, Matt Dawson. We'll be back with another podcast soon.